Welcome back to episode 8 of Seamus O'Hooligan Jr., the Black Irish Blood. I portaled, man. Here I am, County Clare, Ireland. And there he was, my dad jamming his ass off with the Silverman Sound Band and the Hooligans. I just come out of the portal, and there's a bunch of old guys on stage. I mean, banjos, fiddles, and flutes, just jamming. And I step to the stage, man, and I'm playing fiddle-dee-dee. And the crowd kind of parts like the Red Sea, right? And I'm matching the group, chord for chord, string for string. And Pops looks up at me, and then at Fanula, and then up at me, and then at Fanula. And I can see the wheels starting to turn in his head. He's putting 1 and 1, 3 and 3, and 6 and 9 together. Complete side note here. Mathematics is not my strong suit. I mean, I can throw numbers around, but that's all I'm doing, throwing them around. I can see he's thinking like, who is this dude? Hey, he's got a banjo. Hey, that banjo looks like my old banjo Fanula. That dude has red hair. Hey, I got red hair. That brother's face looks kind of familiar. You know who he look like? He look like my ex-wife, Diane. Oh, shit. Yeah, he knew in that instant I was his son. And as the band had rounded out and ended the set, at a distance of about 20 feet between us, we both took the shortest and longest walk of our life. He said to me,
"You're
Seamus O'Hooligan Jr., your son."
"Yeah, I know. You're my son."
"Yeah, I figured you might not know since you left before I was born. Mom, she talked about you on one hand."
"And hated my guts on the other. Thought I was too much of a dreamer."
"No, she just thought you were crazy."
"For having the banjo as my best man. Is that so crazy?"
"And letting it sit at the wedding table."
"Well..."
"And getting box seats for it at the theater."
"Well, it was 2 for 1 night, and..."
"And sleeping next to you in bed at..."
"All right. I was a fool, Seamus. Too restless to settle down. I had too many secrets."
"Secrets like the one you didn't tell her, that your banjo talks?"
"Seamus, son, for the fuck's sake, I don't know what to call you."
"Listen, I know Fanula talks."
"Listen, I got Fanula when I was a wee lad of 8 years old. It's like being Superman. You don't divulge your identity."
"Well, Clark Kent told Lois Lane."
"Not in 1969, he did."
"You should have told her."
"You're right. I should have. So... she knows now."
"Well, she..."
"I mean, you did do the right thing and tell her that Fanula talks."
"Hey, you want to go for a blonde in a black skirt?"
"Did you do at 18 years old what I couldn't do at 8?
"Well, here's the thing. She just started talking to me yesterday."
"Aren't you the pot calling the kettle black?
I've spent my whole life wondering about you."
"Didn't tell her."
"I spent my life wondering why you left."
"Didn't tell her."
"What you were like."
"Didn't tell her."
"Pops, don't you regret it?"
"Didn't tell her. Fanula's been the sacred secret forever. Regret it every damn day. I chased my dreams. Cheated out of my dreams. I lost myself. I lost your mom. Ultimately, you. The son I never knew. Because I didn't know if Diane had a boy or a girl. When Diane tossed my banjo out the 3rd floor window, I rushed downstairs. And it was gone. After an hour of searching and asking folks, I thought Fanula had simply disappeared. What else could I think? My ego was wrapped up in me, Seamus, the performer. You don't understand. What am I without my Fanula? The woman I loved more than Fanula had just pitched me magic out the window."
I didn't want to understand, but deep down I did. Soon we were interrupted by female fans, most of which wanted to take photos with our hands. Yet, there was this one woman with long silky red hair. Looked like she stepped out of a Celtic legend. Large, captivating green eyes. And when she blinked, her eyelids seemed to move in slow motion. She gazed at us. Well, she looked at us. I was gazing at her. Man, this dame looked beautifully otherworldly. Her mug looked like someone took a bucket of freckles and splashed them across her face. And her lips looked like they knew their way around the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop. They weren't saying nothing, but they were mouthing words that had turned a dime store novel into a $10 paperback. She stepped to Pops and I.
"Hello there."
"Oh, the dazzling constellation."
"Hello."
"Ooh, what hands you have. Very interesting lifeline. May I give you a palm reading?
You can see in the future?
Well, sort of.
Sort of?
Only if I sit on your hands.
Sit on my hands?
Yes.
I'm in.
Wait, Dad, I was in first.
Son, clearly you have reservations about this lovely lass placing her... By the way, what's your name, darling?
The name's Luna. Luna Bottoms.
Son, clearly you have reservations about Luna placing her bottom in your hand.
I didn't have reservations. My hands are clean. I was just curious as to why.
Why I have to sit on your hands?
Well, I come with an open hand and no curiosities.
Good. So, the palm of your left hand must touch the bare flesh of my bare bottom.
Dad, don't you have to get to a phone and talk to Mom? Can you believe this dude? I think I like her. I know my dad likes her. This is a whole new level of cock block, and her bottom feels nice against my palm. See you in the next episode of Seamus O'Hooligan Jr., Black Irishman.
One thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Go with the flow. Go with the punches. Yeah, that's one thing I know.
Yeah, you gotta roll with the punches. Hi, everybody. It's your friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. This is show number 266. We're brought to you by Madden Funds, Local 150, Fox's Pizza, Flood Brothers, and Guinness is good for you. You can listen to the show every Saturday night, 7 o'clock in Chicago on Global Irish Radio, GIR.ie. And, of course, the podcasts are usually up by Sunday at HibernianRadio.org. Hope everybody had a great St. Patrick's Day. I'm glad it's over. It was brutal, but fun. And we got a great guest tonight. A young man, John Joe Horan. Am I saying it right?
Correct.
Horan.
Yeah.
And he's a Southsider originally, but also spent a lot of time in Ireland. And he's a young filmmaker, screenwriter, content creator, right? Is that what that?
That all sounds very impressive, yeah.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay. He went to Brother Rice. Then where did you go to college? Several colleges.
St. Norbert College.
Oh, yeah. St. Norbert's in DePere, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yeah. They have the Norbertine fathers. Yeah,
enemy territory. Lots of Packers over there.
And then Mary Immaculate College in Limerick, right?
Yeah.
And what brought you there?
So originally I had chosen Mary Immaculate as my study abroad in my sophomore year.
Okay.
And that was in the spring semester of 2020. Ooh. So it was
COVID.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Until it wasn't.
Yeah.
A bit of bad timing on my part.
Oh, so you're already over there.
I was over there. And I was actually, St. Norbert was great. They were monitoring the situation back when I was just in China.
What were you doing in China?
They were monitoring the COVID situation in China.
Oh, okay.
I didn't go that far yet.
Okay.
And so they kind of were keeping in contact with me. And everyone else was just going on. I had already known that I wasn't going to last more than March. The school was going to pay for me to fly back at March 30th. And then, you know, hopefully I'd be able to go in the summer with my parents like we had planned.
Yeah.
But because of the COVID and the situation, they wanted me back.
Yeah.
So everyone was looking at me like crazy. And then, you know, one evening, almost a year ago today, minus a week, we were all getting ready for the St. Patrick's Day parade and, you know, enjoying that. And then I got the call from my parents that the U.S. had closed down the borders. They were calling everybody back.
Oh, yeah.
We needed. They were trying to book me a flight to go back that weekend or the next day. And, of course, the flights were going for thousands of dollars.
Oh, wow.
Everyone was panicked, you know.
Yeah.
And And so, yeah, two days later, I was flying back to Chicago, you know, going in the spare bedroom for quarantine. Oh. I spent St. Patrick's Day in my spare bedroom.
You had to quarantine at your own parents' house?
Well, I mean, where else was it going to go?
Yeah.
I just live with Mammy and Daddy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, originally, I was supposed to be there for the 4.5 months. I was only there for 2.5 months. But in that time there in Limerick, I fell in love with
Limerick. Yeah.
Obviously, my whole family's Irish.
Sure. Your dad's from Galway, right?
My dad's from Aircourt in Galway, over by Banisloe. And my mom is American.
Yeah.
Her parents are from Roscommon and Leitrim. And, yeah, so whatever, that makes me like a first and a half generation, I always say.
And you're an Irish citizen.
Did
you tell me that? Yeah.
Well, actually, should be an Irish citizen. There was something wrong. Maybe a letter crossed off or something.
Oh.
But, yeah.
You'll get it because your dad was born there.
Sure. Dad was born, grandparents on both sides.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. I'm completely covered. Yeah.
Cool.
But, yeah. No, I fell in love in Limerick. One of the programs at Mary I was...
Mary I? That's what you call Mary Immaculate?
Yeah,
that's
Mary
cool.
I. Yeah. Yeah, Norbs, St. Norbert, Mary
yeah,
I.
Yeah.
And, yeah, at Mary I, they had a program for making documentaries and advertisements. And I absolutely fell in love with that whole program.
Sure.
And we had scheduled that we were going to do an advertisement. And then I came up with the idea of a documentary covering kind of the whole balance of kind of happiness and sadness in Ireland. Not strictly depression, but we were going to shoot that documentary literally the next week that I got sent back.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to realize any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Finished my degree at Norbert, and then I'd always felt that pull calling me back to maybe kind of finish off what I'd started. So I found the option of doing a full-year program over to Mary I, and I saw that they offered the option to do a dissertation by script.
Uh-huh.
Which really caught my attention. I wanted to get into screenwriting, any kind of writing for a long time, and got a little bit of a taste when I was there originally.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Limerick, and I stayed there for the full year.
Oh, good
and
for you.
I did, in fact, graduate, so it wasn't...
Yeah. Well, I read the screenplay. It's just terrific. It's called, Into an Emerald Fire.
Yeah.
Great title.
Yeah.
And it's about, it's kind of a family film. It's about two brothers and their father, and I won't give up the whole plot, but it's very fascinating. And they meet a traveler gal, Siobhan.
Yeah.
We have some friends who are travelers.
Sure, yeah.
So they're quite an interesting group.
Sure, yeah.
As Billy will attest, yes. Our friend John Connors is quite a character. And do you know who he is?
I've seen a bit of his work, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I was talking to Patty about that.
Okay, he's a trip. And he's very involved in the traveler movement and everything.
Well, that was, yeah.
Yeah.
From my parents' generation, obviously, there was the whole traveler situation and the outlook of how it was kind of back then.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's very, very, very much different. I had to do a lot of research with travelers. I wasn't able to. I just got too busy and the time got away from me.
But
one of the people I was set to interview for my research was Dr. Sydney Joyce. She was the first, one of the first, I think the first traveler woman to, or traveler anything, to get their PhD.
Oh, no kidding.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
So I got a much broader scope of kind of the situation there, which had kind of been the idea, because my script was also serving as a research paper, as a dissertation.
Sure.
I had to kind of tie it into Ireland specifically. One of the questions when I was pitching it that they would keep coming back to me about is why this film and like why now?
Yeah.
And for me, my identity as Irish American,
mm-hmm.
Being Irish fully genetically, but nationally being an American, walking those two lives had always been a big interest in my life, something that always, you know, kind of drove me. And so taking that with the film, I was able to tie that along with Pat and Mike's stories, respectively.
Pat and Mike, yeah.
Yeah.
How Irish can you get? Yeah.
There you go. Their father, Jack, is from, and Jerry, the yeah. antagonist of the film,
yeah.
are from Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Siobhan, she's a traveler. Yeah. So the idea of all these different Irish people that are Irish but other Irish.
And the interesting thing is the two brothers go into it with their preconceived notions and very get knocked right on their yeah. ass and say that's not the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. They have very different outlooks. Yeah. They represent the two, from what I've experienced in my life, the two kind of outlooks that many Irish Americans have,
yeah.
which would be a lot of idolization,
yeah.
a lot of nativity,
yeah.
and then, you know, Pat, the protagonist, is more not disinterest or
ignorance.
Yeah. You know, so I like that, have the
He's
opportunity.
He's the older brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. He's a bit of a character there.
Yeah, they're all characters. It's very well done, and I look forward to seeing it someday. So get the money, because that's the first rule. Get the money.
I'll get right on it.
So how long have you been back?
I've been back for a good while now. I got back in August, in the summer, and basically directly after I turned in the dissertation, I booked the flight, and then I
booked
went back.
Booked the flight home, yeah.
Yeah, booked the flight home, and then in October for graduation, once I figured out I actually had graduated and passed, me and my dad went back.
Oh, did you?
And went to Limerick for graduation. He had some business that he wanted to attend to over in Galway as well, so it just worked out that. And we were able to get, relatively to how it can be,
yeah,
very cheap tickets. So yeah. it worked out that way. Yeah. And we had our week there and it was outstanding.
Now you have a brother as well, right?
Yeah. I have a little brother.
Who's, just like Mike?
Well, my little brother's name is Mike.
And how old is he?
He is a senior at Rice now. So he's 17. I don't know. Maybe he got held back. I'm not sure. He's around about 17.
And do you have a sister?
Yeah. I have a sister and she's a senior now at Butler. She's
2 years
younger.
Oh, okay.
Than me,
yeah, that's so. Right. Yeah. What's her name?
Mary.
Okay.
Mary, Michael, John.
That's great.
Or John Joe, as everyone in Ireland and abroad.
Now, you know what? There are people, it's H-O-R-A-N. Some, you probably thought it was Horan at one time, now, or it is Horan now, but it was Horan.
Growing up, it was always Horan.
Okay.
Horan, it was all the Americans were saying Horan.
Yeah.
You know, when, they, when your teachers and you're in kindergarten are saying Horan. I remember having this one conversation, one of the first classes I was there, and the teacher was asking everybody's names, and there was a girl named Moran in the class. And so she was like, oh, we have a Horan and a Moran. I'm like, well, no, it's Horan. The teacher was like, no, it's spelled Horan. And I was just like, oh.
You went along with it, yeah.
Yeah. And it was only until I got to about 8th grade or 7th grade where I started trying to right the ship. The damage had been done. Most of the people on the south side knew me, you know, like Johnny Horan.
Yeah.
And then you'd hear Johnny Horan, then go back home, John Joe, you know, John Joe Horan. So it was, but it was that kind of idea of walking kind of two walks of life where the American side and the Irish side get brought out in different parties. You know, that kind of also helped dictate kind of what the content of my script was going to be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we have a friend, Frankie Moran. And he went to Ireland with us a couple of times, and the first thing you know, the tour guide is calling him Moran. And we said, no, it's Moron.
Yeah.
Well, it's an eye-opener, and but you also obviously have embraced the culture and everything because it's yours, you know.
Well,
It's terrific, yeah. And how old is your dad, if you don't mind me asking?
You can ask about my dad. I don't know if I'm allowed to say about my mom.
Okay.
My dad is 56 or 57.
Okay, so he's a young man.
Sure, sure. Oh,
and then when did he come over?
And my mom's 2 years younger than him, so you can do the math yourself. Yeah. I'm just not at liberty to say. But he came over.
Is your mom's name Mary?
My mom's name is Carmel.
Carmel.
My grandpa was McDermott, so her name is McDermott.
Yeah.
And then my Nana, so my mom's mom.
Yeah.
Her name is Bernadette.
Okay.
So as many, like they just would go, I guess they must have gone to a wall and picked out different Irish Catholic saints and just, you know, threw it down.
I have a friend in Ireland named Carmel.
Yeah. It's
Carmel
more of an
McHale
older
Rowe. Yeah.
older name.
Yeah.
My dad's name is Michal Horan.
Michael.
Well, yeah. So that for him, it was easier. A lot of people know him as Mike.
Yeah.
But sure. His name is Michal.
Michal,
you know,
yeah.
Which is the Irish version of Michael.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, if I'd gone that logic, I'd have been Sean.
Oh, yeah.
John's a lot better of a name than Sean.
How dare you? We have lots of Sean's on Friends. We're friends. Okay, so now you're back and you're kind of finding your way. You're laying brick and doing construction stuff.
Yeah, just
and,
odd jobs been doing. Yeah. Been in contact with some people, kind of showed them the script and some of the other writing over to some other people. Obviously, since about 15, in between school, I've just been working with my hands, all my family.
Yeah.
And which has been great. And it's give that background.
It's good for you.
Well, it's proved to be more of a, given me more of an edge than most people would have thought.
Yeah.
The amount of people, you know, that you get to go around, you get to actually, you know, outside in education, it can kind of be a bit insular. Mm. You know, people have one way. I've, you know, come from a blue collar background, but obviously what I've kind of done would be a bit more, I don't know, not white collar, especially. I don't think people are getting paid enough to be considered a white collar, but, you know, it's another kind of idea of walking two things of life. I would be doing technical stuff in media and writing in college, and then in order to get my ass in the seat and be able to afford, I was working with the bricklayers or the carpenters or the framer, whoever.
I did the same thing.
Well, it kind of gives you a...
It was enlightening. I worked on a bricklayer's... I was a bricklayer's laborer a couple of summers. They treated me like crap, but I loved it after a while. I mean, you know, but just the we used to, you know, obviously we'd go to a bar every day for lunch. These guys would go nuts.
Oh, yeah.
Next thing you know, I was right there with them.
Yeah.
Greatest memories are of the bricklayer gangs. Jackie Sullivan was a contractor here. He was my boss, and he died recently. But you have your education, and then you have your education.
Sure,
and that was 100%, an education,
100%.
Yeah. So you in your script, you have this lovely traveler girl. Did you have any romances over there that you'd like to tell us about in Ireland?
Well, none with any traveler girls.
Oh, okay.
The idea, of course, came from, like I was saying, I was looking for different groups that were Irish, for sure.
But different.
But other Irish. Ireland was something that really, well, obviously it struck a chord with me being an other in Ireland, being a Yank in Ireland. You know, having the exact same genetics, but a different way of talking and a completely different, childhood and background.
One of the interesting things is the plot is they find this map that is your dad had, you know, your fictional dad. And you guys think it's in Gaelic, and you get to Ireland and the traveler girl goes, "This isn't Gaelic. It's Cant." Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Or Shelta. Gamma.
Tell us about that, what that language is all about.
Well, so, and you might, some people might be a bit more aware of this now after like a show like Peaky Blinders, where they're kind of Romani gypsies.
Yeah.
And they have their own way of talking, which is basically the same as how it is in Ireland. They have an insular kind of language that obviously is a bit different now that there's more literature about travelers, but it was their own language that they could speak with other travelers and only other travelers. It was very important for them to have their own language because the travelers, their entire identity has been based off of, they're Irish. They could consider themselves Irish, but they would consider themselves travelers before that.
Yes.
There was a big push in about 2015 or 17. And it finally got past, it had been years in the making, where they finally got recognized as their own ethnic group.
Ah, yeah.
Even though they might look the same, you know, to an American's eye, they might look the same as an Irishman. It was very important that they were considered their own group and that the law respected. And then eventually it did in 2017. I believe it was 2017.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've done the research. But it was... So all these different, when I was in Ireland, you know, it's gotten a lot more, there's just more people that look different in Ireland.
Oh, sure.
But one thing that really struck me that I really was able to appreciate, you know, you'd see a group of kids, all different colors, coming out of the school, mm-hmm. and, you know, some of them would be speaking Irish.
Yeah.
They'd be coming out of an Irish lesson. So you have mm-hmm. someone that's much darker from what you'd ever expect that would, you know, what the Paddy kind of stereotype is, and they're speaking Irish. You know, my dad, a lot of my family, they grew up in a farm in Ireland. Mm-hmm. They took Irish lessons. They know a bit of Irish, but yeah. they couldn't converse.
Yeah.
You know, that wouldn't be really them. You know, but they were born in Ireland, and their generation, it just wasn't that big of a push.
Yeah.
Now there was a big of a push more recently for their own language to that to get spoken. I just thought that was something very interesting. And I was just able to put a smile on my face to see just such an appreciation for, you know, the Irish language, you know.
We have a film festival that we do every year. Yeah. And some of the films we've done have all been in Irish.
In Irish, yeah.
With English subtitles.
Well, which one was it that won an Oscar for a short film very recently? Not this coming Oscars,
remember.
But it was... Yeah, it might have been an Irish Goodbye or something
that. The Irish Goodbye.
But,
yeah,
if I might be confused, but yeah, some Irish spoken, mm-hmm. you know. So there is a growing and has been growing.
And particularly in the film community. It's
yes.
Kind of a purist thing. But it's interesting. At first you think, oh, my God, this is an Irish, but you get into it and they got the subtitles and you feel good. You feel more authentic watching it and being part of it, you know. So there's that. So one of the I enjoy those movies that are all in Gaelic. I think they're terrific, and you feel more authentic. And you don't feel like you've missed anything at all because it was in a foreign language. Yeah. It just makes it that much more real.
Yeah, yeah. One of my most famous, or one of my most my famous, one of my most favorite recent movies that I've seen that's been in the theaters. I've always been a big Godzilla fan.
Oh, yeah.
I love those movies. Most recently, they had, it was called Minus One, a Godzilla movie, and it was in Japanese.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the best movies I'd seen in years.
Yeah.
And, of course, all subtitles, but once you get past those, you know, as a kid, I wouldn't want to watch any kind of black and white movies. That was another barrier.
Sure.
You know? And then, of course, you know, I saw... when I was a little bit older, It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
And that opened my eyes to so many old classic movies, mm-hmm. you know, especially as I got more interested in filmmaking and the history of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Those kind of films that are more maybe alternate than what you'd think of Hollywood, with streaming especially, I feel like it's kind of broken up the barriers that were there, and now more people are consuming different media than just American media, which
we've had so much fun with the film festival, and over the last 10, this will be our 10th year, meeting the filmmakers is the greatest thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we bring them here for the weekend, and we have a blast with them. And so we met John Connors, and Mark O'Connor is a guy who did a film called Cardboard Gangsters. I don't know if you saw that.
Me and my dad loved that movie.
Oh, it's terrific.
Yeah, it was a great time. Dark movie, though.
Yeah, it's very dark. But we've seen a lot of great films and had the filmmakers here, and we just chose a film for this year called The Sins of Ireland. It's a film by Alex Fegan. He did Abbey Feel was a film he did.
Okay.
He also did The Irish Pub.
Sure.
And what was it? Oh, Older Than Ireland. Did you ever see that film?
I didn't see Older, but I heard Irish Pub, I have heard.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he's coming in. He's coming in this summer, or this September, and we're going to have the world premiere of his film. What's the name of it? What is it? Oh, The Sins of Ireland.
Sins of Ireland.
And it's all about confession. And they interviewed 15 Irish priests.
Right.
They claim confession came out of Ireland, where people confess their sins in the confessional box. And
the way my nana speaks about it, yeah, maybe.
It's just amazing. A great, great film.
Yeah.
So very proud that he's going to be with us, and we can show that film to the world. And, you know, so maybe someday we'll be showing one of your films, John Joe,
well,
you know.
You know.
But what's the first rule? Get the money.
Again, yeah.
Get the money.
Getting right on that, yeah.
Now, when you were writing the part of the traveler girl, Siobhan.
Siobhan, yeah.
Did you do any research with like traveler women?
Travelers, Well, oh, okay. Well, I didn't catch your meaning.
Because I got a question for you.
Okay, yeah.
Now, there's a scene in the film.
Right.
And I tell you, I was very touched by the whole thing. But the brother, the older brother, is can be kind of a jerk. And
a bit ornery, yeah.
And with his own brother. And anyway, he has a moment with this woman who I'm assuming is gorgeous and everything. And you think they're going to kiss. But they don't. You know, and it's like, you know, or somehow they're going to, something's going to happen. But it doesn't. I wanted it to happen.
Sure, yeah.
But, you know, I'm always looking for the sexy angle.
Yeah.
But that's a great moment, I got to tell you.
Well, I appreciate
and you,
that.
And you created that, and it's just, it's a real, it's real. So keep at it, man. It's great stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The whole idea with kind of Pat's character, in a nutshell, is obviously without giving too much away, but he had to undergo some trauma from some loss.
Sure, his father died and his mother died early.
Years before that.
And his father was a cripple for many years.
Right, forcing Pat to kind of become the caretaker, de facto caretaker.
Yeah.
And so Pat kind of puts a lot on himself that he thinks that he needs to, but that very much becomes an anchor, a burden for him, which all stems from the idea that Pat, like many guys I know, a bit of myself as well in that, Southside Irish, Southside Chicago, blue collar, working with the trades, you know, guys aren't waxing about poetry. It's very much a masculine kind of thing. And the best way to talk about things a lot of times is not to talk about it.
Yeah.
And so Pat is that kind of character taken to another extreme where...
And his brother, little brother Mike's a little more laid back.
He's not had to put so much on.
Yeah.
He's, of course, though, he's a bit younger. He was a bit younger when this was happening. Mm-hmm. You know, so... He's not as tied down. He's, you know, a bit more open to everything. Pat has shut off himself basically from everything.
Big time.
From the world, from certainly from any kind of affection.
And, you know, you don't realize that when you start reading it and you're thinking, this guy's a jerk.
What an asshole.
But then you realize, look at everything he's dealing with. And
You don't. Everyone's got, you know, cobwebs in the closet.
Yeah.
However you say
that. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So him, that, Siobhan kind of, with the travelers themselves, you know, you can say a lot of things, but very much a society of free spirits, which is very juxtaposed with Pat, his whole idea.
Yeah.
But then, of course, deep down, Pat as well has ambitions and stuff that he's really pushed
He wants
far
to be
down.
A chef. Yeah.
And he's trying to, you know, so get he's, the, he's yeah. he can't
trying to get to France
instead of coming to terms with that within his own environment. He's looking to get the hell out, you know, and get away from everything that he feels is pushing him down, not knowing that a lot of that is himself kind of putting him in that situation because he's not able to deal or not even willing to try start unpacking some of the stuff that's been bringing him down for a long time.
Have you done a table read of the script or anything like that?
With myself. With myself around our house in Limerick when I was writing. Just or in my own head, you know, on the bus, you know. But then writing it, a lot of it, the background, the whole Chicago, Ireland, you know, I could really only, and I didn't have that much time to write it, to be honest, once we were able to fully get it accepted and fully going.
Yeah.
And I was able to get, you know, download the actual application to write it.
Yeah.
Didn't leave me with a lot of time. So I had to kind of pull a lot from what I knew.
Yeah,
and when sometimes I get in a rut, a lot of times I'd be listening to music when I'm writing. I'd be at a coffee shop or a bar occasionally. And one of the things, and it was good for research is what I was telling myself, but it did prove to be helping me, taking off my headphones for a while.
Yeah.
Just sitting, maybe with a pint or a coffee or whatever.
Yeah.
And just sitting and listening to what was going on around me. Or I'd be walking with the headphones in, and then sometimes I would just take them off and just listen.
Yeah.
And when you start listening,
the people,
you start hearing all these different, you know, interpersonal conflicts, whatever.
Yeah.
And especially for me, I am an American, proud to be an American. I'm Irish, of course, and I have so much Irish family and Irish friends of family, and I've grown up on Gaelic Park, Chicago, and in the South Side. So there's been no shortage of Irish in from every county you can think of.
Yeah.
But still, to help with when you're writing a voice that's not your own,
right?
Whether it's an Irish voice or a traveler or Northern Irish, it helps to actually listen to people who are from that.
Absolutely.
You know? So, yeah. You know, one of my good friends that when I came the first time was a guy, an older guy at the local pub.
Mm.
And his name was Mike. Yeah. He was from Derry. Everyone called him Derry Mike.
Oh, Derry Mike.
And to say he was a character was an understatement. But yeah. He was a great, great guy. And he was just a good friend to me. But he had so many stories from growing up in Derry. So a lot of the conflict that Jerry and Jack, the boy's father, that they were coming from was pulled from his experiences.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously in my own reading and researching about the Troubles in Ireland,
yeah,
which, you know, obviously was a huge, huge part of the Irish identity.
The psyche, sure. Yeah.
Sure. And so much film, I mean, so much of the best Irish films that have been made were from that wave of filmmakers that were trying to capture kind of all the angst that was going on mm-hmm. during those times.
Yeah.
You know? So, again, trying to pull from what my limited scope was, but bringing it out to hopefully a larger kind of idea of what being authentically Irish is. Obviously, especially nowadays, when I was pitching it, I basically said, you know, why I would make it now. The idea of who gets to be Irish is very much something that's in conversation now.
Oh, yeah.
Very more now than maybe ever with so many different ethnicities
and
people coming
we
in.
Have a radio soap proper that we just introduced a couple months ago.
Sure, yeah.
It's called Seamus O'Hooligan Jr., Black Irishman.
Right.
And it starts at Woodstock, and there's a guy from Ireland, Seamus Fingers O'Hooligan. He's a famous banjo player, and he has a band, and the Hooligans. And they're playing at Woodstock, or they think they are. And then they get cut from the act, and he's very, you know, upset. And he goes over, and he's sitting on a bale of hay, and this right. beautiful African woman appears. And they have a quickie in a barn, and 9 months later, Seamus O'Hooligan Jr. is born. But by then, his father has... we have this terrific actor, Greg Holloman, and he has just taken to it like a duck to water.
Sure.
It's really... we're in our eighth episode now. We're looking for an animator and everything, but that's what it's right. about. What is... The whole point of it is young Seamus, who's 18... trying to find out what it means to be Irish. And he goes, why do I crave corned beef and cabbage and stuff like that? Just silly. It's very silly, but a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And that's all behind it. What's the Irish identity? What is it all about? So we're having a blast doing that, I got to tell you. Hopefully we'll be... Well, they can hear it in Ireland if they're listening on Global Irish Radio. They hear it tonight, as a matter of fact. So it's something that I've explored in my career for a long time.
Sure, I bet, yeah.
In 2009, I went with my family to Ireland for the first time. And I had never been to Ireland. I don't know, I've known a lot of Irish people in my right. day. And I went to the church where my grandfather was baptized in 1861. And we had his baptismal certificate and everything. His name was Dennis Cusick. And
I know a few Cusicks.
Yeah, sure. Michael Cusick started the GAA.
Sure.
Anyway, my mother was his daughter. And we go to the church, and there's the baptismal font. And the priest says, that's the exact same baptismal font where your grandfather was baptized. And so I'm there. I put my hands in the water, and the spirit of my ancestors just took over. I was touched, and after that, I've dedicated my entire career to Irish culture.
Sure.
That's why we started Hibernian Media and Hibernian Radio and the Film Festival, became an Irish citizen. It's a search, you know. It's the same one you're on, you know.
Well, you know, it always is very interesting to see, you know, growing up, I was very, very cognizant of the plastic patty idea. Mm-hmm. Many Irish, you know... like I said, that kind of...
Well, they'll give you hell for it, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, the idolization of Ireland and Irish people that Americans often do, Irish American or other.
Yeah.
We're still all probably feeling it from St. Patrick's Day, you know, really celebrating the Irish identity. Or maybe just me.
But, no, it's not. I'm kidding.
But that kind of, you know, the idea of so many of these American tourists coming over to Ireland or really trying to retrace their roots, mm-hmm. and just actual Irish people, you know, kind of having a good bit of disdain for that idea.
Yeah.
And then, so me knowing that going into there, sure. so not trying to overplay it, but then also being completely driven for a huge part of my life and a huge part of my identity based being Irish.
Yeah.
And retracing my grandfather's, my father's, and the family before, mm-hmm. you know, not so much retracing their steps, but trying to reconnect with that side of myself, which has dictated so much of my life. So it's, you know, definitely can be very cheesy, but there is also a lot of love there. There
absolutely.
Really is. And
they've been great to me. I can tell you
there's
that.
A lot of negativity probably as
sure.
well, but
you know.
Good heart, you know, it's coming from good places, you know? And so there's a lot to be said about embracing that.
There's the word falcha.
Falcha. No,
there's nothing like an Irish welcome. And that's what, we acted like idiots there. And,
sure.
But at the same time, they were very loving and welcoming. Do you know the Fitzpatrick Castle? It's in Dublin. It's right in Killiney outside Dublin.
I might have been by it.
There's a guy, John Fitzpatrick, who's his father started it. But he had a hotel here in Chicago, and I interviewed him years ago for the Sun-Times. And he was very kind to me, just a terrific guy. And I said, we're going to Ireland to retrace my roots, and I'm bringing a cameraman. And he goes, you can stay at the castle. Me, my two sons, my wife, and a cameraman.
Wow.
For a week on him.
Wow.
So that made an impression. Well, so when we go to Ireland, we always go there the first night and the last night of it. And they were so kind to us. But it's things like that have reinforced that whole thing, and loyalty and everything. They're just terrific, you know.
Yeah.
So God bless the Fitzpatrick. So you got your plug in there. It's a great hotel.
Sure thing.
So what's the plan? Do you have a plan, John Joe?
Well, the plan has been the same since I got back.
Got to keep eating.
Got to keep eating. Yeah. Right now, living with Mammy and Daddy.
Oh, that's fine.
Living the...
Is Mike live there, too? Oh, he's still in high school.
Yeah, he's still there. My sister is out of the house for now, but then she'll be doing grad school back in Chicago.
Okay,
so hopefully I can get something going where I don't have to be such a drain as I have been. But they've been really great about giving me the time now to try and figure out. I've been applying the jobs... nonstop online, which can kind of be a lot of dead
it's
ends.
It's nice that you have a trade that you can fall back on, though.
Well, yeah. And that's even that, I wasn't doing so much. I was almost solely focused on looking for stuff to use my master's. Yeah.
Yeah.
To use all the money I spent on school, even with all the, you know,
that'll
money
come.
I put into it, you know.
Yeah.
But, it's good to know that I have options, yeah.
We got to wrap this up.
Sure. Yeah.
But you never know. One of those options could be Hibernian media, my
100%.
Friend. 100%.
One tip, my dad, he said, I had to mention as well, that when my grandfather was in Boston, he came in, my dad says, 11 days and 13 nights. So I don't know what the math, but on a ship to Canada and then into Boston. And they were part of this. I don't know if they started up or they were part of it, a Hibernian
The Ancient Order of Hibernians.
There you are.
Yeah, sure.
So they
it's
were
a
part
great
of the,
Catholic organization.
Yeah, my grandfather.
All over the country.
My grandfather was part of that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, when they were in Boston, they, you know, they stayed in Boston, then moved back to Ireland. He said, I have to. He said, John, you have to mention that. You know?
Good.
So,
well, that Hibernia is the Latin word for Ireland.
Right.
And there is a very famous painting by, I think his name is Robert Fagan. And it's called Hibernia as a Lady. And it is a beautiful Irish woman, topless. Okay?
Well.
The Art Institute had an exhibit maybe 5-6 years ago with all these great paintings from Ireland. That one caught my eye, obviously. So I put out an email blast of the picture of her, and it said, she doesn't need your support, but we do. But anyway, Hibernian, I'll tell you, do you know who Brian Warfield is?
I don't think so, no.
He's the Warfield, they wrote, what's the song, Pat?
I don't know.
Up the Ra, you know, ooh, ah, Up the Ra. Anyway, it's the, his brother and he had a. They're still around.
The Wolftones.
The Wolftones, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I had to get the rights to the song for our film, right. Our Irish Cousins. And I didn't know where I was going to get it. And I found somehow I got a number for Brian Warfield in Ireland.
Wow.
He answers the phone.
Of course, yeah.
And I said, Brian, this is Mike Coolahan. She goes, hey, Mike, how you doing? And I said, well, we want to use your song in our film. He goes, sure, that's fine. And I said, well, you know, we have to, I got to get this in writing. How much do you want? Oh, he goes, anything for the Hibernians. And I said, it's well, like we're right not now. The ancient order of Hibernians. We're Hibernian men. He goes, just do it. He was terrific.
Sure.
And I said, you've got to put it in writing. And he did. He sent me an email. And so Brian Warfield, there's our shout out to you. God bless him.
I mean, yeah. In the crib, I was listening to the Wolftones. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. They're okay. A huge part of our
All right. John Joe Horan, great to have you on the show. Well, you'll be hearing a lot more from you, I'm sure, pal.
Hopefully,
so stick around, and we'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hey, folks, don't go just yet. Grandpa will be back. Mike? Who's Mike? Oh, that's his name? I didn't even know he had a name. I thought it was just Grandpa. All right, well, we'll be right back on Hibernian Radio with Mike Coolahan.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Cops and firefighters risk their lives almost every day, so they shouldn't have to risk their hard-earned dough in any get-rich schemes or the blather of old pals in the real estate biz. And good luck trying to figure out the stock market or cryptocurrency or even economics 101 when you come home exhausted at the end of your shift. What you need is somebody you can trust. And they're in short supply these days. Hey, take it from me. I've lost fortunes in showbiz because I thought I was smarter than everybody else, and I wound up bankrupt and broke. It took me a long time to decide to find a friend I could trust who had my family's best interests at heart. That friend was my late pal, Joe Madden. I met him as he passed the basket at St. Luke's, and I'd turn my pockets inside out as he came to my pew, and I'd say, "A tapioca." He laughed, but didn't stop him from supporting my films and showbiz endeavors over the years. Joe Madden had my back. A few years before he died, Joe started Madden Funds with his sons, Mike and Danny. The Maddens and Houlihans have been pals for a long, long time. They can advise the best path for your investments. Madden Funds will have your back too. Need advice on your 401k or your rollover IRA? You can trust Madden Funds to help you protect and grow your investments now and in your family's future. Go to their website, maddenfunds.com, or call Mike or Dan Madden at 708-848-3200 and tell them who Lee sent you.
And we are back. Thanks to John Joe Horan for that great interview, and you'll be hearing a lot more from him down the line. Hey, you know what? I don't know if everybody heard, but Taoiseach Leo Varadkar resigned from his position today. And I'm taking credit for that because on St. Patrick's Day, I wrote a little column for our old pal John Cass, the title of which is Paddy's Day, A Bad Day for Snakes. Took a couple of shots at old Leo. And, well, here we go. Couple 3 days later, he resigned. So you can thank your old pal Uli for that. Also, I want to remind everybody, we just launched our brand new website. And I want everybody to go there. Look at all the stuff we got going. It's hibernianmedia.org. Hibernianmedia.org. It's got all our films, all our books, all the radio stuff. It's a plethora, and there's a great video we have about all this work we're doing, narrated by our friend Sorica. Check it out, hibernianmedia.org, and there are also several opportunities to donate right there on the internet. So we would love to hear from you, hear your thoughts, and send us some money, will you? Because it ain't easy. But now, where was I? Okay, so check out the website, hibernianmedia.org. Now, you know, Billy, when I'm walking down Western Avenue, I look in the window, Ken's, Wrong's, Hearts, or any of those great Irish saloons, I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist. He says to me, "Hey, holy, who died?" Bernice B.O.D., 104, passed away peacefully in her childhood home on St. Patrick's Day. Wow. She was baptized at St. Cecilia's Catholic Church. She was an only child after her brother Robert died in infancy. Her parents moved to B's lifetime home on Low Avenue in Canaryville when B was 2 years old. She attended St. Gabe's Grammar School and graduated from Visitation High School before joining Cook County's Purchasing Department, where she worked until her retirement. She's a loyal member of St. Gabe's Women's Club, the Boyce Park Senior Citizens Group, and an annual original last living member of the Lowettes, her club of dear girlfriends. B also had great respect and gratitude for the Mercy Nuns, who, in addition to being her teachers, became her neighbors when the St. Gabriel Convent was built on the corner of 45th and Low in 1925. Although she never learned to drive, she took advantage of public transportation. B was preceded in death by her loving parents, Walter and Catherine McGuire, and her son, Walter. She was survived by her children, Edward, John, retired CPD, and Joyce, Richard. Joyce married to Richard, retired CFD, Chicago Fire Department. God rest her lovely soul, B.O.D., 104. Holy cow. John Garrity died 3 days short of his 70th birthday. He served 30 years, Chicago police officer, receiving over 100 CPD commendations. He went to St. Ignatius Grammar School, Sullivan High School, and he later graduated Chicago Police Academy. God rest his soul, John Garrity. Jeremy J. Toomey, 81, born in Castle Island, County Kerry, Ireland. Beloved husband of Mary, loving dad of Maureen and Dennis. God rest his soul, Jeremy Toomey. It is with profound sadness that the family of Patricia Libby, at the young age of 50, she was survived by her children, Aidan and Caitlin. She was a resident of Roundstone, County Galway, Ireland, Marco Island, Florida, and Chicago. She is at peace. Rest easy, dear, sweet, shining light. God rest her soul, Patricia Libby. William E. Burns, 98, United States Army veteran, World War II, beloved husband of 59 years, to the late Mary Burns, Nee O'Connor, loving father of Mary Fran, the late Sharon, Dorothy, William, Karen, Donald, and Jean Kelly. God rest his soul, William Burns. Roseanne Lonergan, 90, Nee Mooney, beloved wife of the late William Lonergan, loving mother of Margaret, Mary, Barbara, Linda, Laura, and Lisa. Roseanne was a longtime employee of General Foods Kool-Aid. God rest her soul, Roseanne Lonergan. Joseph P. Marin, 89, of Chicago, beloved husband of the late Mary, loving father to Paul, Patrick, Daniel, David, Susan, Mark, Martin, Julie, and Mary Jo. God rest his soul, Joe Marin. Rita A. Roberts, beloved wife of William, loving mother of William, Kathy, Michael, and Susan, graduate of Immaculata High School and founding member of the Immaculata Irish Club. God rest her soul, Rita Roberts. James Henry Jim Phelan, age 80, beloved and devoted husband of Barbara Phelan for 57 years, loving father of James, Julie, Barry, and David. Jim was the proud of his Leo and Loyola education, his CPA firm, Phelan, Johnson, and McGreal. Being a Marine and a wide variety of jobs, We all knew the Schwinn bike story and the rat story. He loved the slots, sports games, wine, and grouper. He loved life. Jim and his wife Barbara met at Friday night St. Killian's High Club. I remember that. Barbara was 15 years old and a sophomore. Jim was 17 and a senior. They had a beautiful life, blessed with 3 children and 9 grandchildren. God rest his soul, Jim Phelan. Mary Ann O'Grady, 79. She was Merce Murray Ann to the countless children that she babysat. She was a longtime member of Our Lady of the Wayside Church in Arlington Heights. She is survived by her children, Bill, Elizabeth, Philip, Brian, Margaret, and Jim. Mary Ann is preceded in death by her husband of 56 years, Philip James O'Grady. God rest her soul, Mary Ann O'Grady. John Jack Joseph Quinn passed away at the age of 71 after a long battle with Alzheimer's. God rest his soul. Jack was born in Chicago. He is survived by his wife of 41 years, Gail, and his son, John Joseph Quinn. He was a proud and devoted grandfather to 3. Jack was raised in Evanston, graduated from Loyola Academy, attended University of Michigan, which he remained a proud alumnus. He was a devoted Catholic and the epitome of a family man. He spent his life living in the image of Christ and made all those who knew him better. Jack was most always sporting a smile, as were those around him. God rest his soul. Jack Quinn. Let's close up the crypt, Billy, and take a little break, and we'll be right back after these messages from our friends. With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Deep, deep,
in the south side of Chicago.
Get me out of here.
So deep, deep,
all the way up to 93rd Street.
Get me out of here, please.
Across the tracks. Where they only spoke Yaki Dak.
Oh.
And the people barely survived on a strict diet of crunchy bouncer and bad food.
Hey, man, you want another drink?
Yes.
Can I get you two?
This yeah. is almost 70 years we're talking.
70 years?
What?
Oh.
Something entered his cranium.
His cranium?
And wormed around his frontal lobes and took him to a state of mind.
Mind, yes. mind, mind.
Hidden place on the other side of bunkers.
Welcome.
Crazy, silly, screwy.
Have a seat.
Known as... Hooli Town.
Hooli Town. Hooli Town.
Welcome to Hooli Town. Don't stay too long, though.
How come?
Because you might not come back. Welcome to Hooli Town.
Why, thank you.
And you're welcome.
Yeah, welcome to Hooli Town. And thanks to our old pal Greg Holloman for that great intro. Okay, I got a couple of dirty jokes for you. I got a note the other day. It said, thank you for your order from our sex shop. You asked for the large red dildo as featured on our wall. Please select another product. That's our fire extinguisher. Okay. 2 priests are off to the showers late one night. They undress and step into the showers before they realize there's no soap. Father John says that he has soap in his room and he goes to get it, not bothering to dress. He grabs 2 bars of soap, 1 in each hand, and heads back to the showers. He's halfway down the hall when he sees 3 nuns heading his way. Having no place to hide, he stands against the wall and freezes like he's a statue. The nuns stop and comment on how lifelike he looks. The first nun suddenly reaches out and pulls on his manhood. Startled, he drops a bar of soap. Oh, look, says the first nun. It's a soap dispenser. To test her theory, the second nun also pulls on his manhood. Sure enough, he drops a second bar of soap. Now the third nun decides to have a go. She pulls once, then twice, and three times, but nothing happens. So she gives several more tugs and then yells, Holy Mary, Mother God, hand lotion too. That was filthy. Okay. Hope everybody's recovered from St. Patrick's Day. Fun show tonight. Thanks to John Joe Horan and his great screenplay. We'll be hearing more about that in the future. So thanks to all. God bless you all, and we will see you later. Bye. Yeah.